You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
City Limits. Brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9am.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Okay, and of course City Limits wasn't on last week because it was the Disability Day programming, and congratulations to all who took part in that because it was great programming, but it means we're now 2 weeks and 7 minutes after since the last one, because looking at the clock here, because we let that one go out because it's pre-recorded and we thought it was important, so we let it go. But anyway, City Limits today, it's the second Friday, Wednesday of the month, so the right day, Kevy. And Maxwell's over there. I'm Kevin Healy. And we've got
late than never, Kevin.
Transport today. John McPherson coming, going to be on the second half of the program, a regular commentator on transport. And on the Brekkie Show this morning, they had a really good interview with a young woman in St Kilda in Port Phillip, who's homeless, talking about Port Phillip's attack on homeless people. And there's an event tonight which it was promoting, but just give another plug there, Anne.
Yes. So it is.
I'll pour your cup of tea, by the way.
Oh, could
doing
you do that for me?
Can
That'd
do.
Be great.
Yeah.
So to the sound of tea pouring, I'll just remind people that there is a meeting at 5 p.m. tonight at St Kilda Library, and then a march over to St Kilda Town Hall for the speeches at 5:30, which is all about this terrible law that they want to pass. Basically, it's punishing poverty yet again.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, certainly people in that area should get there. And Melbourne City is doing the same thing. It's bloody awful. Do you want an Aries cup or a Don't Be a Mug, Join the Union Today cup?
Oh, let's go Aries. I'm not Aries, but I'll go for it.
Okay, I am Aries, so you can have it. No, you can have it. It's okay.
I've got the Kevin cup today.
There you are. I've just got Don't Be a Mug. Anyway, there
Good
you are.
Good reminder, Kevin.
Yes, that's right. But people who aren't mugs, of course, are lawyers, as we know.
One or the other.
That's right. I think many of them are, in fact, but that's beside the point. There's a number of cases taking place. There was one here against BHP over that catastrophic disaster in Brazil where people were killed, and they destroyed so much of the, and still destroyed, remains destroyed so much of the environment. And their case has been dragging on. It never actually got to court as such, to a hearing, but they reached a settlement of $100 and something million, just $110 million. And originally the lawyers doing it, the class action lawyers, Maurice Blackburn and a firm called Fi Finney McDonald's, agreed to a 15% of the was fair and reasonable of the $110 million or the, whatever they got. I mean, before they got it, they agreed to 15%. But now they've got the money, the lawyers have taken 50%.
Oh.
So the poor people who actually are the sufferers in the whole thing, who copped the damage, copped the catastrophe, are left with less and less, and the lawyers walk away with $48 million. A number of people, even within the law, have suggested this is a touch greedy. But anyway, that's what's happening. And they say it's fair and just because you've got to look at all the costs and everything else.
It's nice when you can just adjust your rates as you go, isn't it?
Isn't it? So that's just good to know. So that's I should have kept doing law. I started doing law and I walked out of it, yeah. Up at Melbourne back in the 60s, yeah, early 60s.
You could have caused a lot of trouble.
I could have. We've talked many times now about the environmental impact of data centres. And but they talk more than anything else about the power usage and the incredible amount of power they're using. But finally, we've made a point a number of times about the fact that they use so much water, and in a country like Australia, or any place in fact, but where water's becoming such a rarer resource, it's absolutely, I think it's scandalous that these places are using so much, taking so much of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, and we have talked about it with Helen Vandenberg, of course, who's an activist in these areas, but finally, the Financial Review, just this Monday, had a front page headline. They've finally woken up to it. Warning on data centre water usage.
Oh, front page, okay.
Yes, they've suddenly woken up. An individual data centres proposed for Australia's big cities are seeking daily water volumes equivalent to that used by 80,000 homes, prompting utilities to demand stricter rules and water efficiency standards for the huge new hubs. And apparently they're coming in with, as always happens in these things, with bigger and bigger centres using more and more. The applications have been made by some of the proposed mega precincts in Sydney's western suburbs, which are more than 10 times the size of the existing facilities. These data centre hubs have lodged planning applications over the past 12 months amid a global rush to invest, and then they want a quick decision, which really can't be made. But, you know, that's really forcing people, saying, well, you know, they're happening around the world, we need to get this quickly. So you start rushing things, and of course once you rush things, the environment's the thing that suffers from it. But the Water Services Association of Australia, which represents more than 150 water utilities, said governments needed to adopt clear water efficiency and water recycling rules for data centres if they are to capture the, you know, et cetera, the, and all the usual crap. But but certainly I think we just need to just maybe put a bit of a halt on the whole thing and work out what's going on. There's also in New South Wales government, where, and of course Melbourne's copying them as well, but in fact the governments are vying to accommodate them and to host them.
They're falling over themselves.
But the New South Wales government at least now is considering increasing infrastructure charges for them.
Mm-hmm.
So that they themselves pay for the massive water and energy usage rather than passing it on to other consumers. Now, yeah, goodness me, isn't that thoughtful?
Yeah, I think I'd rather have the water than their money, but anyway.
Yes. There was another article where a couple of them in America ran into trouble. They overheated anyway despite all the water usage. And they make the point, because they're so power intensive and working around the clock, a data centre uses up to 50 times more energy per square foot than a typical office building. Most of the energy they consume ends up as waste heat. Think of how your laptop or phone gets hot when you're using it a lot of running complex, etc., and then goes on about why they need the water and all
I
that.
I did but see it's... a blip recently. I can't remember where it was, where they've put the data centre under a town and then they're heating the town with the heat.
Oh, that's very clever.
That might have been Norway or somewhere like that.
Oh, right, yes.
They're piping the heat in to heat the homes.
They don't have to. They're creating the heat in the first place, which is destroying the world. So it's working. It's working all over the place, isn't it? It works well. Now, unfortunately, though, on the environment, business groups are quite upset about the deal that the Labor government did with the Greens. They're upset that a number of areas, particularly forestry and gas and oil, and didn't quite get the deal they wanted. They were virtually going to be fast tracked to get approvals, but now they've got to go through another process. Now it's a faster process than before, but it's still not good enough. They're quite upset, and they feel that the coalition let them down badly by not making an agreement which would have been a little bit better for them.
Never happy, are they?
No, never happy. But the government's trying to sweeten the deal, it says here, with a $300 million forestry fund, which the Prime Minister said would deliver a bigger and more sustainable logging industry. So I'm not sure whether that's good or bad, but I suspect it's not good.
Oh, I wonder what they're going to do with that $300 million.
Yes, put it in their pockets, I suppose. Anyway, and the Business Council of Australia, which usually comes out with pretty progressive stuff, as we all know, has said this is a missed opportunity to deliver the type of economically transformational reforms the country needs and what we need to do now.
Okay.
Isn't that sad? Mm-hmm. We're not going to get the transformational reforms we need.
I really dislike it when they take words and Orwellian them.
Yes. Well,
we do need economic transformation, but I guess we have different ideas about what that
well,
is.
Well, also, of course, Roger Cook also now says that with its wonderful energy resources, Western Australia is the perfect place for data centres as well. So he's in the picture. He's in the picture, old Roger. Roger Cook, the planet.
Oh, dear.
And,
yes, indeed.
Anyway, it points out here, Cook, when we know the, you know, the plebiscite thing, mm-hmm. he was key to killing off the deal with the Greens to pass similar reforms during the last parliament, said he had unsuccessfully lobbied for oil and gas projects to be given fast-track approvals. Poor Roger.
Oh.
Cook said he believed Western Australia could be the first to strike a deal with the federal government, which would grant WA the power to assess new projects within months. So now that they've done that, he's going to get the power back to them anyway and give them the fast approvals. Isn't that wonderful? It's a significant improvement on the current act. It's a significant improvement on the laws that were being considered previously. So this is a good outcome. It's not everything that industry wants, but it is a good outcome. But nowhere does he mention the environment.
Mm.
And it's, isn't it an environment bill?
Mm. Who's he talking to when he says good outcome?
I think he's talking to the people who he thinks run his state, and they do. So there you are. And, of course, even Financial Review last week had a headline, I won't go, no need to read on, AI data centres to derail Labor's emissions effort. Well, of course they will, because if you're using that much power, unless it's all renewable, of course it's going to stuff up the thing.
Why do they want them here? Is it jobs, 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 and more jobs?
Well, presumably it's that plus it's profit, 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 and more profit. I think that's usually the bottom line, isn't it?
I wonder what the selling point is, though, you know. Like, I imagine there's just one lonely person wandering around in this, you know, warehouse full of servers.
Well, they don't employ that many people either. That's the point, of course. Yeah, it's a bit like, Amazon, of course, they got in America a court, I can't think which state it was, but one of the states got stuck into them because they sacked a woman because she was pregnant. And here, a woman in Australia has won a case last week. In fact, she took it to court because she informed them she was pregnant, and within days she lost her shifts.
Right.
And she was reinstated by the court and given, I think, a $15,000 compensation.
Brilliant.
And I thought, well, from Amazon's point of view, $15,000 would almost send them broke. imagine the dint in their coffers. But they said, no, she hadn't been sacked. Her shifts had been put on hold.
Right.
But I think if you ask them what on hold meant, I think it meant permanently on hold, probably. Mm-hmm. And anyway, but she won the case. And,
interesting, the difference between the two countries.
Hmm. Yeah. In America, the court also ruled against Amazon for sacking the woman because she was pregnant. So, they've copped it a couple of poor old Amazon. That's bad luck.
Aww.
Yeah. Don't you feel for them? But also, in the last couple of weeks, Rio Tinto and BHP have made the sensible decision from their bottom line point of view that their profit is far more important than saving the environment. And so they've both decided to cut back dramatically on their decarbonisation plans because, well, things have come up that mean they can't decarbonise because they've got to carbonise to make the profit. and it's quite dreadful that, you know, having made sensible decisions on behalf of the shareholders, they could come under a bit of attack. The Australasian Centre for Corporate Responsibility, whatever that means, said the miners' spending cuts made them heavily dependent on others' actions to achieve their targets, Rio and BHP should not be stepping back and hoping other businesses and even taxpayers will do decarbonisation for them. Well, I think the taxpayers bit's pretty good because they usually do step in. Mm-hmm. It's a cop-out and they should be using it. So Rio will need to pull a rabbit out of a hat if it believes it can still hit its 2030 targets while significantly gutting its decarbonisation spending. And it points out the safeguard mechanism doesn't seem to be working with them because of the 277 sites covered by the mechanism in the year to June, more than a dozen were owned by BHP and Rio. Total emissions by the 207 sites declined 2.4% in the year to June, when they should be going down much, much more to keep up. But then what happens is, of course, when they don't reach it, they go out and buy carbon credits and plant a tree in Bali, and it's all okay. Everything's okay. Don't feel bad about it.
Plant a palm oil tree in Malaysia somewhere.
Yeah, that's right. It's all good. It's all go.
Okay.
But also on the terms we're on the environment today. Earlier this year, Russia dropped a bit of a bomb, a drone, onto the roof of the Chernobyl protective shell. Now the problem here is, of course, that the International Atomic Energy Agency has had a look at this and says the protective shell can no longer block radiation from leaking out.
As a result.
And they've got and of course, with the war going on, I'm not sure they can get there to fix it up. But anyway, it's a major problem. Radioactive dust could now leak from the site, inspectors said. And the repairs are expected to take place next year and a full restoration carried out once the war ends.
Goodness, is that on the horizon?
Donald Trump had ended on January the 21st, didn't it? He said day it was going to take.
Right, that's good news. They can go in.
But it's a bit of clean-up operation still going on, though. And they only have limited temporary repairs, so that's quite serious, in fact. I mean, it's a disaster. It was a disaster in the first place, and it's getting to be worse.
I've heard the wolves have gone back there, though.
The
wolves. The wolves returned
the wolves,
to the area.
Like, yeah.
So, under the cover of radiation, I guess.
They left Wall Street and went down
there. That's right.
Anyway, also Deloitte Access Economics, they're the mob who recently got sprung doing all that stuff with AI.
Let us not forget.
That's right.
And writing their reports with AI.
And there was hardly anything in the thing that was true. But they've decided to try and help us all. They've come up with ideas for us saving Australia and getting rid of the government debt.
Good on them.
Yep. And to help raise it, a five-point plan, which includes increasing the goods and services tax. But they say, though, that this is the plan is to take the burden off working-class Australians. So if working-class Australians now have to pay more for everything they buy... you might be able to explain this, Angus. You do an economics program on this station. I can't work that one out.
You want me to explain a Deloitte report to you?
Can you just explain to me how that helps working class Australians? Come on.
Well, obviously, if you have to pay more for things, you have to think more carefully about your budget, and therefore you will budget better.
Oh, great. That's great. That's right, yeah. But then the retailers don't get as much, and that impacts.
Their shareholders might not be too happy.
No.
I don't know. This is a confusing one to me, considering, in the end, as I would say, the Australian federal government debt is not really a debt and it does not need to be paid back. Hello,
well, there you
Deloitte.
Are. On which, a lovely juxtapositioning on yesterday morning in the Financial Review, the main headline is Treasurer flags tough budget calls, including getting rid of the little subsidy we get for electricity bills. That's been wiped. But next to it, pressure on wells as trips pile up. And so there's all this list of thousands and thousands of dollars that Anika Wells has been running up. of our money next to the Treasurer saying we've got to cut back on spending money for the things we need in our
society.
She's
doing important networking.
She is. I mean, I don't know how much of a beat up the whole thing is, but nonetheless, it's an interesting juxtapositioning, I think, that all that.
That budget is, it's like the un-Santa Claus, isn't it? It's like the anti-Santa.
That's right, yeah, that's right.
We're going to take and take from you children.
And it's the right time of year for it. Mm. Did you want any more tea? Because I'm
No, I'm good.
Out.
I almost spilled my tea over here, but
okay. How awful. Yeah, right. Now, also, the state government, in terms of trying to save money, is getting rid of things like Vic Health, for God's sake.
Yes.
They've been recommended all these things, and the International Union for Health Promotion and Education Scientific Affairs Global Vice President James Smith said it was incomprehensible to think that this is a good decision. Mm. An independent agency could focus on truly evidence-based work and take on the harmful industries that often work with governments, such as alcohol, tobacco and gambling. And just last year, Vic Health was part of a coalition, the Cancer Council-led Food Fight campaign, that criticised fast food advertising on public transport and called on the government to ban such material from the stations of the flagship project, the Metro Tunnel, and on it goes. But that's happening there. Hospitals are, private hospitals are screaming out for money, but this is the bit I found really interesting, because Albanese said, he's our Prime Minister in case we're right.
Okay.
A string of private maternity and mental health ward closures is worrying the Albanese government, which says it will not bail out private companies.
Mm.
Now, this is while they're handing all this money to
a new policy, is it?
All these smelters and things getting lots of money all over the place. But nonetheless, apparently we're not bailing out private companies.
Kevin, don't you know the difference between a subsidy and a bailout?
Oh, now, this you might be able to explain this one for me then. Because in the same week, Arnott's Biscuits have got a $45 million loan from the Government Investment Fund.
Oh, it's a loan. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And this follows another one to Liontown Resources, to Paddy's Food, which makes 4 and 20 pies, among other things. So we're actually subsidising now 4 and 20 pies and Arnott's Biscuits. Now, in fact, in terms of the hospitals, of course, I would have thought that everything that Paddy's Food makes and everything that Arnott's makes contributes heavily to people being in hospital.
They're not taking a preventative approach are they?
I can't think of one thing that Arnott's make, any one of their biscuits, that you couldn't call a disaster from a health point of view.
I've always thought they're one of the food groups.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the only bad joke we can make is that they're not worth a cracker. But
I heard a collective groan.
Shouldn't have made that bad joke. But anyway, why are we giving money to those people to put people in hospitals? As he said, we're not into subsidising private industry.
And those people who are pointing out the dangers of highly processed foods are losing their money at the same time. Makes a lot of sense.
Everything's making sense here this morning. Now, the other one is that we'll finish on this and then go to John.
Okay, for transport.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is a bit to do with transport, actually.
Mm-hmm.
The government is also, this is the Albanese and Co., is exploring a $2 billion privatisation of parts of the agency responsible for air traffic control and airline safety.
Privatisation.
In a plan in which it would lease back firefighting and rescue equipment. Now, they're saying it's not yet finalised, but it's been Air Services Australia has sort of recommended it because they're running into trouble financially or something. But the idea of privatising something as important as air traffic control and airline safety and then leasing it back. I mean, once you lease back, then the value of selling it in the first place anyway dwindles immediately, and you eventually pay back more than you got, as has happened with all our privatisations of electricity and everything else over the journey.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, putting in a middleman is going to make things cheaper and more efficient.
Of course. When you put someone in the middle who's out to make profit from it, as opposed to just provide it, then obviously it's going to work much better.
Of course.
That's what we were told when we privatised the SEC and the Gas and Fuel Corporation. Look at the wonderful benefits we've gained from all that.
We have indeed.
John McPherson also finds our transport bureaucracy pretty frustrating, I think. We'll find out a little after this break.
All right, we'll be back with John, and in the meantime, we'll have a listen to Bart Willoughby. A good listen to Bart Willoughby with Kariba, and that was because we cannot find John at the moment.
No, problem of live radio, but yesterday when I spoke to John, we discussed what we're going to talk about this morning, in fact, and he was there and ready to go, so I'm hoping he's okay, actually, because he's not answering either his mobile or his landline phone.
Yeah, John, if you're listening, give us a call at 3CR.
Yeah, so let's hope John's okay.
But meanwhile, Kev at City Limits is going to keep us entertained more transport info. We're
going to have to rave on this end. It's one of those wonderful things about live radio, isn't it? One other item then I had before we go on to transport per se. You'll be pleased to know then that the Australia has just bought its first homegrown military aircraft in 50 years. It's a wonderful prototype of the Ghostbat drone. And this is just absolutely wonderful. It's the Navy's, it joins the Navy's autonomous submarine, the Ghost Shark, the Ghost Bat and the Ghost Shark. Isn't that wonderful?
Great names.
One flies and one swims. Because apparently we've got a credibility gap. We're lagging in adopting drone technology, and I think probably a bit of criticism from Donald Trump about those things. But the Ghostbat is designed as a cooperative combat aircraft that teams with crewed jets such as the F-35 fighter and Wedgetail early warning and control aircraft, extending how far pilots can see, how safely they can operate, and what they can target in dangerous airspace. So isn't it great? They can kill more people. And this is homegrown. That's the best bit about it, isn't it? The Ghostbat.
There's progress for you.
The ghost shark, of course, the ghost shark's interesting because we're certain by the time I don't think we'll ever get them, but if we ever got those submarines that AUKUS is all about, the onomatopoeic AUKUS, I would have thought that by that time, any so-called enemy, and we've got to think of a so-called, well, they keep naming it, and I think it's wonderful the way that they keep running around bad-mouthing China in one area and then wanting to be our biggest
trading partner
in the other, and there's all these warmongers running around. Mm. But by that time, I'm sure they'll have some weapon that would get rid of our submarine in about 10 seconds.
They'll have a Ghostbuster
that
point.
they'll have their own ghost shark that'll be down there doing the job. Anyway, they're smart, these people. All these police and military keep talking about intelligence. They keep calling it intelligence. Mm-hmm. We saw how intelligent it was, of course, when we were told about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
That was very intelligent, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, very intelligent. But I think what that was just straight out lies. If that's intelligent, then that's intelligent, I suppose. But
I still remember Powell with his PowerPoint presentation. Yeah. I thought all you have to do is make a PowerPoint and you've got weapons of mass destruction.
Mass destruction. And of course, the Secretary for War at the time, and it's now called War, Donald Rumsfeld, he was stunned that they didn't have them when they got there because he'd sold them to them. So he couldn't work out where they got to.
What have you done with them, guys?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, when you've got ghostly things, they sort of just disappear on you, don't they?
Yeah, so anyway, that's that one. What we've seen, of course, in the last few days is the last couple of weeks from last Sunday week is it's Metro Mania, according to the Herald Sun.
I was hoping we were going to talk about the tunnels.
The Metro Tunnel. Now, I was hoping John could explain to us what the great benefits to us all are, because I'm not sure yet what we get. I mean, you've got a tunnel that takes trains from the end of the Dandenong Line, Coburg, Pakenham and Cranbourne, through to Sunbury, and you can get on and off at these various stations in the city. But I'm sure there are benefits, but I just need to be told what they are in terms of how it's really going to help us all in terms of improving public transport. I'm sure it will
Did
have
some
benefits.
Did you go for a first ride?
Haven't had a first ride. I have had, though. Look, I always have these awful stories about public transport. I've got two this week, in fact. Two. I might as well tell them now.
Tell us your stories.
Yeah. Well, a couple of Sundays ago, I was going down to Bentley. There's a group of us who meet once a month for lunch on a Sunday, and we rotate venues, etc. And there's one of the women in the group. She used to be on the 3CR committee, actually. She lives at Bentley, a fair way from the station. So when we go down there, I take my bike, because walking for me is a bit difficult these days. So I ride from the station to her place. So I had the bike, and we got to North. We got the train, got off at North Melbourne to get the Frankston train. And the sign said Frankston. The train said Frankston. We got on the Frankston train with my bike. And we sat at Flinders Street for ages, and one of the women with us got up and said, "This is strange." Looked up and said, "Oh, hell, it's about to leave and it's going to Werribee." So no announcement that things had changed. No, nothing. So we bailed off the train, grabbed the bike, bailed off the train, and as it pulled out, I realised I'd left my old Guardian helmet on the seat. Since then, I've made some attempts to get it. That's another question also. The lost property office, no idea where it is. But is John on the line?
We're about to find out. Great. I think we found John.
Ah, good.
We'll get him in a moment. But finish your story about lost property.
Well, you have to ring, and you never get to talk to a human being. You just keep getting a message saying, leave what date and what did you left. So I've left three messages, never saw it. I finally succumbed and had bought a new helmet. But anyway, then we discovered, of course, that Frankston, somehow they just in the moment changed it. So you had to get a bus from South Yarra which you couldn't put the bike on.
Oh, yes.
Well, we resolved it because our friend at Bentley said, well, I'll come over to Middle Brighton Station, stay on the Sandy Line, and we left the bike there and all that. But and just last Saturday, before we get John on, we had a rally for accessible public transport. Now, it did get rained out. It didn't matter much. But it was also the first weekend of free public transport for everybody leading up to February.
Mm-hmm.
So the Upfield Line, as usual, celebrated by not running at all weekend. And so anyone,
you get what you pay for there,
so,
Kevin.
So anyone with mobility problems, wheelchair people who wanted to come to the accessibility rally couldn't get there anyway because they just couldn't get there. So isn't it wonderful?
You do have great stories. John, do you have your own stories?
Hello.
John, it's a relief to hear. We suddenly, we thought, hoping nothing had happened to you.
It was just over. Oversleeping, I'm sorry.
Oh, John, oversleeping. This is terrible.
Imagine.
We like our guests to be well-rested.
But you can,
thank you, Anne.
John, you can now explain to me what I was just saying. What the Metro Tunnel, what are the benefits for general commuters?
Well, the benefits are that for the lines that feed into it, which are going to be the lines from the southeast, the ones that go to
Pakenham and Cranbourne, yeah.
Yeah, those two, and then the ones, well, to the north, to start with, it's just going to go to
Water Garden?
No, beyond.
Well, Sunbury, goes to Sunbury, but they're talking about Water Garden being a lot
some,
of going there.
Some of them will stop, won't go beyond Water Garden. Well, the benefits is they are going to get supposedly upgraded services are going to be very frequent at all times. This was all designed, you see, before COVID, and also and those lines were getting very, very busy, very overcrowded. And so that's the reason those lines are going through the thing. And it's I think it's probably going to have the airport, when we finally get a rail line to the airport, if ever, that will also go through it as well, and so those particular lines will get very, very frequent services with new trains, and sort of automatic operation of the trains through the tunnel, through the loop, you know, thing as well. I think they're supposed to be the advantages. And, of course, by taking those trains out of the present city loop system, there'll be more capacity in the loop to run more trains on other lines, except, of course, we have no idea whether Upfield's going to get any advantages out of it, Kevin. Sorry.
I can come up with the answer to that one right now,
yeah,
John.
Almost certainly no, yes.
That's right.
Poor little Upfield, yes.
But they keep talking about an enormous number of extra services that are going to be available after February when the thing becomes permanent and settles down. So it sounds amazing, but how are they going to squeeze all those services in, I suppose? But anyway, they say so. Yeah.
Yes, well, the number of extra services, of course, they always describe the extra services in a way that makes it sound incredible. But it's in reality, it's not that many extra services. But it could be that other lines, there hasn't been any disclosure of what's really going to happen on the other lines. There's none of that's been made public. They don't like doing that because, of course, there are plenty of people who can pick apart what they're offering and explain to them that it's really not, you know, it's not nearly as wonderful as they're trying to make out. But see, things have changed since COVID. As we know, the patronage is still, I don't know, maybe 25% below what was happening before COVID in peak hours, particularly, I think, because, you know, a lot of people have got used to working from home, thanks very much.
Yeah, well, that, in fact, comes to the next item I was going to raise, which is they're talking about changing the fares system, and they say one of the reasons is because they're getting less in the box. There's less money going into the the system since COVID, for those reasons that less people are using it, more people are working from home, etc. So now they're talking about changing some of that. In fact, it says for the first time since train and tram networks were privatised in the late 90s, and privatised is an interesting word because we still own it, we just rent it out. We actually rent to people, we pay them to rent from us, which is an unusual way of rental, but that's beside the point.
Yeah, well, it's such a wonderful deal, yeah.
Yeah, fare box returns will be pocketed by the state, with operators given fixed fees and separate reliability measures and penalties. So the state seems like it's going to pick up the losses more than the private companies yet again.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it could be, I don't know, it could be that they're having difficulty finding people to actually operate the system at all. They might have to go back to operating it themselves.
Oh, dear, wouldn't that be terrible?
Oh, God.
Okay. But they are talking about flexible fare systems, off-peak pricing and short-distance fares to get more people off roads and et cetera. Now, that's a good idea if they do it. I mean,
I think so, yeah. It's still, the zoning thing has, you know, become ridiculous, where some short-trip tickets can still cost a lot because you cross a zone boundary. And so, you know, you're paying for two zones for a short trip. Yeah. I think there should be a certain amount, a short-trip ticket. If you can have a free central zone in the city, why can't people who get on the trams further out for a short trip also get a short trip that's free? You know, that's on the tram system at least.
Or go one or two stations on a train.
Yeah.
And you're paying, you know, if you're paying full fare, you're paying full fare, which is bloody ridiculous for two stations or something.
I've never quite understood quite how the simple yet complicated fare system has evolved. It seems to me to have got a bit mad, the whole thing. I think, you know, it could possibly be sensible to have a short trip that's free. It's hard to see the the rationality of the ticket system at the moment.
At least they're thinking about it, I suppose. But the new system where the new Mikey system where you can just use a credit card or whatever. They shouldn't be taking longer than the rest of the world to sort that one out. But one of the reasons might be that, according to an article in front of me now, Victoria has an incredible 1,400 fare types, including a myriad of concession schemes and travel zones that have made the $1.7 billion upgrade of the Mikey system, currently $137 million over budget and 18 months late, more complex. I suppose that does explain something.
Well, it does explain something, yes. As we know, there are ticketing systems in other places that seem to work perfectly adequately that we could adopt, like the system used in Hong Kong or Singapore or perhaps even London, you know, which are big complicated systems. But we can't just use something pre-existing. It's got to be dreamt up specially for Melbourne. Well, that could be part of the problem that you've just had explained there in that article, which I've never heard that mentioned previously.
No, well, it says here that Mikey upgrades, but once Mikey upgrades are done, it would, quote, unlock capacity for a wider range of products. How many more than 1,400 do you need? Anyway, that's a by-the-by. But it also points out, John, that, and this is something that we've talked about, previous contracts have guaranteed minimum fare box revenue, which has seen hundreds of millions of dollars handed over to Metro Trains to compensate for lower-than-expected patronage. So we do subsidise them very heavily, don't we?
Yeah, well, there we go. Yeah. Well, that sounds like that is the lay of the land. I think it was Perth brought in a new ticketing system for $40 million, I seem to recall. So, you know, we we always have to do it our way, and it always seems to be ridiculously expensive.
Yes, and well, the fares have dropped about 300 million since COVID, according to this. So,
that's
one of the reasons.
That
so now we're
significant,
we're taking it over only because it's better. It's better for the private companies that we run it, and not them.
Well, then again, it does seem that the private companies need another bribe to be involved at all. But of course, all the expertise that once would have been in the department and in, you know, good old Victorian Railways to run these sort of things no longer exists. So, you know, they're almost in a situation where they've got to maintain it in the current sort of privatised way to make it run at all. Oh, dear.
Because of your sleeping habits, we've only got about four or five minutes left.
Yes.
Anything else you wanted to raise today? Because I've got other items, but maybe there's something you
wanted
to talk about.
I'd just mention that, the new metro tunnel thing is open with five new stations, and everybody's been oohing and aahing at the stations and saying they're wonderful. One that I don't think is wonderful is the Anzac station down St Kilda Road. That doesn't seem to give any weather protection at all. It's got a sort of a roof over it, but it's not a big roof. And it looks to me as if at any time there's rain with any weather behind it at all, any wind behind it, you're going to get completely wet waiting in the on those platforms. As often is the case, the station roof has been designed to work as long as the rain's falling down, directly down and gently falling with no wind behind it.
Well, lots of tram and bus stops are similar, aren't they? You have
a roof
that is only effective if the rain doesn't actually rain.
Yeah. And it doesn't go anywhere near the... And the roofs hardly ever go out to the edge of the edge, so that they protect the actual door of the vehicle.
Oh, don't be
like
silly!
No.
Good God, John. That requires forethought, for God's sake.
Well, so the Anzac one, it's got this oval shaped flat roof, which looks quite elegant, but I mean, it seems to have been designed for elegance as usual, not designed for practicality at all.
Why are we laughing, John? Why are we laughing?
I just don't get these sort of things. I mean, you can design and build things that work and look pretty, but I don't know.
It's the end.
Apparently,
yeah, go on.
Yeah, sorry. I was just going to say the other stations seem to work. A thing I think I've noticed observing them is that all the signage, none of the signs have the lettering in big enough to make it easy to read at a distance, because of course that sort of thing starts to look doesn't look so nice. But surely practicality and ease of wayfinding around the stations is more important than making everything look pretty. But pretty seems to win, and that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, we're pretty well out of time, unfortunately. But the end of the year, John, I suppose, really, I'm not sure we've seen that many massive improvements in the transport system in Melbourne in the last 12
months. No, I don't think so. Not really. There is the Metro Tunnel, I suppose you could say. It's open. And we haven't really seen it running in full blast. That won't happen until February. Apparently the trains are running smoothly through the tunnels at the moment because they're using this period for a trial to see whether it runs well. But, the question is how much did we really need the thing because of this huge drop in patronage from after COVID? Suddenly all this capacity that's going to be available to use on the northeast lines and the southeast, northwest lines and the southeast lines. You know, the question's got to be: Do we really need it?
We'll find out. We're back in February.
We'll see whether it's so exciting.
We'll start another year.
People get out of their cars and back onto the train.
We'll start another year in February, and we'll take off now, and you can go back to sleep.
Well, I think so. I just might do that.
Okay, John. Okay. But look, thanks for your time all year. It's been wonderful.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Ken. Thanks for putting up with me too.
Okay.
By the way.
Okay. And next week it's our final show of the year. We're doing housing, and Anne, thanks for keeping us on air. You've done a great job.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, Kevin.
Joe's next.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.